Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's a new word game taking the internet by storm. It's called Wordle. It's completely free. And by design, it's not a time suck. Is the next wave of watching sports a courtside VR experience? With the Oculus Quest 2, you may be able to be at the game without actually being at the game. Rebundle, a black-owned woman-founded hair care startup that creates plant-based hair extensions, gets $1.4 million in pre-seed venture funding. And have NFTs jumped the shark? We've got three different opinions from three different voices, and we're all probably kind of right. We've got all this and more in episode 18 of The Tech John. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And from Philly, it's your girl, Tech Life Steph.
And in the Snowpocalypse version 2, but not really, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech.
Y'all be wildin'.
You ain't got no other a.k.a. for us today.
No, a.k.a. Snowpocalypse Part 2, because it finally snowed down south, but not really. Just got a little coating. My family was more than excited to go outside and make a dirty snowman. So that's what they did, because it wasn't enough snow to do anything. But this is like the first snow they've seen in like years. So, and they're kids. So, I mean, what are you going to do?
Well, for being here in central Ohio, that is, you know, we're not the snow belt like up around Cleveland, but you do get snow here. This is the first time this season that I've actually had to shovel. So literally an hour or two before we're live doing this, I went out and shoveled the driveway. It's really cold, so it's super light, fluffy. It only took me 10 minutes to do, you know, my driveway and sidewalk, so it wasn't that bad. I don't miss that, though, because I haven't done that. Usually, you know, by this time of the season, I would say I had to shovel four or five times. So for it being the first time, I didn't have to shovel at all in the fall of 2021. I'm not going to complain at all.
No, and we didn't get, I don't think we really got snow. We got like sleet, you know, rain, slush kind of thing. And my neighbor, shout out to my neighbor. I think his name is Mark. I don't really know his name like that. Mike. His name is Mike. Actually, I do know. He will usually get up early and take care. I have a shared, walkway out of the front door of my house. And then I don't have to do my driveway typically because it's never that deep. But yeah, he usually be on it with the walkway. Well, I be thinking I need to get up and put all my stuff on, and I look out the little window out the front door, and it's all like, dude. Right.
Well, don't be one of them type of people that when the one time he don't do it, you mad.
No. I don't mind getting out there. I can't stand it, but it don't take too long, and it's not a whole long thing.
I will say this. Because I didn't like these neighbors, and they've moved away. So I'm going to talk about them. But I had a neighbor that, like, in order to finish the sidewalk, and I've measured this, they had to go 4 feet, 2 inches additional. And they would just leave that. So it's like, why would you just leave that right there instead of just doing it?
That's when like some of the people in my, I have a, like, it's a duplex with a courtyard, and there's a one main shared walkway, and then everybody has their little path to their porches and stuff. People will shovel half that walkway.
Yeah.
Like lengthwise. So it's just this narrow strip in front of their house. I'm like, for real? For real?
Don't be that neighbor. Like I said, just over 4 feet. The time that, now we're not talking about like you got 18 inches of snow and you need a snow blower to get it. And it's like, that's backbreaking work. It's like 33 degrees and it's all melting. It's not that. I'm talking about, it's like, it would take you an additional 90 seconds, if that, to do that. And what makes it worse is that they will walk over it to do there. So now if you don't get to it first, it's all mashed in and it's hard to get back up. And down. It's like, you know, it's like, why would you just not do that? I don't know. So don't be that neighbor. Don't be that neighbor.
That's some of my neighbors too. Yeah. Straight petty.
But anyway, let's get some formalities out of the way and talk about Patreon. So folks, we are on patreon.com. If you head over to patreon.com/thetechjohn, you can become a supporter of the show. And with that, you'll get access to things like we're doing now, the live stream. We had a good suggestion that just came in today, is that we should actually publish the exact time that the live stream is going to start and just put it on the website, put it in Twitter, advertise that, which we really haven't done. It's only gone out to the patrons, but there may be some other folks out there who are listening that may actually want to know, hey, how can I get in on this live stream? How can I get on these conversations that y'all have that don't necessarily make the air? So Patreon is the way to do it. Once again, it's patreon.com/detectjohn. And you can find all about us there. And with that being said, want to also mention that it is Martin Luther King Day. Now, by the time that the masses are listening to this, it'll be the day after. But we have to give that shout out to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, as my grandmother used to say. The King. Got to put the "the" in it. Martin That's Luther right. the King. So,
and you got to pronounce it Kang.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. So, yeah. Before I actually started, I don't want to say caring about copyright. I just didn't know about it. And, you know, we care about it now. We want to do things the legit way. I would have just grabbed the whole "I Have a Dream" speech and just threw it up. But, apparently the family doesn't like that. They want you to go through their organization to get the rights to put up, the speeches. And it's not always paid. So don't think that it's always like a money play for them, but they just want you to do it the official way. They actually make it available to schools and universities and nonprofits and all that kind of stuff very regularly. So just want to, you just can't just throw that speech on your podcast, which is, I've been accused of doing that in the past. So, but anyway, let's go ahead and get into some tech. We had a couple of, tech stories that I was really interested to get into. The first one is, and I know both of y'all are playing this, but have you, Wordle? I just found out about this, John, last week. I didn't know anything about it. I actually was on Daily Tech News Show and they clued me into it. And so I've only been able to play a couple of days, but man, this game is very addictive.
Wordle very addictive. I got mine in three today, like three tries. I busted that out a little bit today. I was pretty proud of myself.
Same here. I do it with my daughter. She doesn't have the patience to figure it out. So she quickly tries to go to the internet to find, not necessarily cheats, but, go to thesaurus, letter that starts in A, and then she'll go through those, and letter that word that ends in D, five letter word. These young kids, they ain't got no, the short attention spans, man. This is the internet. I blame the internet.
Well, here's the interesting thing. The guy that built this, I believe his name is Jason Wardle, actually, built this for his wife. And he specifically designed it so it wouldn't be a time suck and that you wouldn't just spend hour upon hour upon hour playing it. And it turns out that actually might be the hook, because just like your daughter, Terrence, people are going out and getting the stars. They're not trying to cheat by looking up to see what the answer is. But they're spending enormous amounts of work and energy trying to figure out, because you only get five tries? Six tries.
Yeah.
So they're doing an awful lot of work to try to get it. And then, of course, when anybody does something that is completely free, no advertising, you're going to have folks that are going to, let me see if I can't monetize this. So you just had gaggles of folks who are creating clones called Wordle, both on Android and iOS.
I thought it was an app. So I just went straight to my app store at first, and there's like a bunch of Wordles in there. And I'm just like, oh, it's that one. And then I actually looked and I was like, oh, it's not an app. So it's a web based game. So yeah, there's a ton of things out there. I love though that, like you said, to, you know, keep people from continuously scrolling and playing. You only play once a day. And you don't have to, I love that you don't have to register or sign up or create a username and password or, you know, give away your firstborn or it just like, just play the game one good time and go on about your business, about your day. So I really appreciate that simplicity of it.
And I will say this, the App Store, they are pulling down all of the clones that actually were clones of this.
But you know, they're only pulling down the ones that have Wordle or Wardle or some iteration of the name in it. If they call it something else, they may be able to sneak by.
Now, I believe that there was an application called Wordle, completely unrelated to this game that, you know, was built, relatively recently, that goes back a while. And because it has the same name, they have just been getting immense downloads. And the author was saying, I'm even making money off of this, but I know people aren't, they're not giving me the money because they're thinking they're getting Wordle. They're getting, you know, they're getting the other thing, this, you know, this web app that's not even an app. So he has actually decided to donate what he is making, you know, to charity, which is cool. So the, you know, the guy that actually created Wordle is like, oh yeah, you know, this is a real one, you know, gave a shout out to him. But I just, go ahead.
Now I was going to say, unfortunately, I don't see this lasting long because the guy who created it doesn't seem super hype about the virality of it right now and the idea that he has to maintain it and update and, you know, make it so that more, you know, I'm sure his server has crashed, whatever server he's hosting this game on has crashed more than once. So, he doesn't sound too thrilled about the idea of this becoming a real thing.
Yeah, he's moved it over to, S3. He's, gotten Cloudflare for it. So this is all at his cost. And, you know, I believe it is just a JavaScript app. So once you go to the site, you download it, everything is on your, whatever you're looking at. It's in your browser. You're not actually going back and forth for the website, so it's a pretty light you know, app and website. But yeah, at some point somebody's going to make him an offer he can't refuse, because if we go back in the day, the dude that was doing WhatsApp Messenger, I'm never going to sell this until somebody offers you $1 billion, and then right. Now becomes the property of Facebook. So
or not even it may not even get that far, you know. Stephanie, you know, at the very least, and again, I'm not going to tell this dude what to do with his time or his invention or, you know, whatever he feels like this should go. But I agree. Eventually, this is going to become a chore.
Yep.
And at the very least, he should, if I were him, consider at least getting paid for his time. Now, that don't mean he got to do ads or that don't, however he does it, you know, to keep it at the core of what he wants to be, it's going to take some work to continue that. Mm-hmm. And the only way he can, you know, the only way in this world as it stands now is to, there's going to be a cost. And eventually either he's going to have to decide, okay, well, maybe if he don't take the cost himself, maybe he'll just administration fee for him to farm it off or sub it off to somebody else and let them manage it. He pay them a salary or whatever the costs go into it. And then he can kind of, you know, not be so enveloped, but he's going to have to take a cost in order to pay somebody to do that.
He's paying to host it, you know what I mean? At a minimum, whatever nominal fee that might be, you know, and maybe Cloudflare will be like, you know, oh, you're providing a service to people, we'll give you space for free or whatever. But the time involved, the time investment on his part, you know, I don't think he set out to be a game developer per se. So it'll be interesting to see how much support the game continues to get and even how popular it stays 3 months from now. You know what I mean?
That's,
you know,
what I was going to say, 3 months. I was going to say 3 days.
Right.
So
we can change the channel.
Someone's going to get in contact with him because there are so many things. The fact that he, by design, built this to where you can only play once a day, people will play.
But remember how popular Words with Friends was? I mean, everybody thought that was like the thing, and it was just that.
It's still kind of a thing, though. It's still kind of a thing, and it's like they got a bag for that. So
if y'all still playing Words with Friends, hit us up in the chat, or you know, leave a comment because I think that ship has sailed, but I could be wrong.
So we will see. I will be logging in, and it's just fun. I'm not going to go hit a thesaurus. I did get it today on the, I think I got it on the fourth try, but I was just lucky because I just typed a word that was very close to it in the first try. So, I just happened to get lucky.
I guess we can't give it away.
No, I'm not going to give it away because people might still, you know, I'm going to get it.
I had four letters out of the five in the first try, and I was like, oh snap. And then it took me a minute because it wasn't I won't give it. Yeah,
I was the same way. Maybe today's wasn't that hard because it's like, wow, it's like it was literally. I had three letters. In the second try, I had four letters. I was like, oh, okay. So you know, so like I said, I think it took me 3-4 tries to get it. But anyway,
do y'all have a go to first word, or y'all just random out the gate?
I'm random. I looked at the article that we were talking about this from, and they gave some hints about where you should start or whatever. I do try to be like, you know,
R-S-T-L-N-E.
Yes. No. I couldn't think of the name of the show. I was like, what is the name of the show?
The Word of Fortune. Wheel of Fortune, rather. The Word of Fortune just made
something like that, but otherwise, I don't have a strategy.
Nah. I haven't been playing long enough to have a strategy. I'm lucky to come up with 5-letter words as it is anyway. So trying to do it in a puzzle, we just going to go with what 5-letter word can I think of that I haven't used yet?
And
we'll go from
there. Shameless plug, for everybody watching. I will actually be on Fox 29's Good Day Philadelphia, this Wednesday talking about Wordle. They want me to hop on and just, you know, talk about Wordle or whatever. Okay. So, you can watch it streaming at, fox29philly.com, I believe. You can watch the stream, somewhere in the 8 a.m. hour.
So, this was a quick hit, and I think we made it into a regular story because we talked about it for 10 minutes, but I do want to get to, Terrence, you had another quick hit that we wanted to talk about where, you know, what is it like to sit courtside via, you know, VR?
Yeah. So, one of my, gripes with VR is it's still kind of gimmicky, in my opinion. Now, I'm pretty sure there's all kind of use cases and people enjoy it and exercise and whatever the case may be. But I still, for the price of the headset, which is comparable, maybe pay a couple more bucks for real game console with much more functionality. It's like, it's a lot of money to only still after what? 5 years, maybe still only have like a little bit of use out of something like that. One of the things that I thought was interesting, but nobody's ever really talked about it, was to be able to use VR, virtual reality headset, and sit like courtside via a basketball game or a football game or at a major concert. Never really talked about it. NBA did a little bit of something prior to COVID. Then COVID hit. But they never really still talked about it. And then I was on my other podcast with Snobbles Cast with Nika Monfort, and we were doing our tech predictions. And one of my predictions was, you know, Apple, since we're Apple snobs on the show, is Apple is not going to do a VR headset. You know, it's one of my hot takes. You know, all rumors point to they're doing one, but I don't think so. But she, Nika, countered with, well, you know, maybe the reason why VR is not going that far is because Apple's not in it. Once Apple gets into it, and then other things like the NBA, the NFL, you know, Live Nation, sports, Ticketmaster, all these other venues, all these other services may start to offer an VR experience. And then after that, you know, just doing research for this show, I came across a story to where a CNBC sports journalist was sent a VR headset and did like the NBA courtside experience with like a Celtics and a Pacers game. And he pretty much just kind of goes over his experience, and me just reading through the experience is like, that's what would convince me to get a headset, because one, I ain't trying to go outside like that because, you know, I got kids, COVID, all that stuff. you know, so I'm trying to stay as safe as possible, but I am catching cabin fever in a sense that there are some things that I want to do. And it's like, all right, well, there's got to be a happy medium. And, you know, just him going through some of these points as to his experience with going through sitting, quote unquote, courtside using an Oculus Meta, I think it's called Oculus Quest 2 device. It's $299, $300. And he actually goes through the process of sitting through this actual live game. You know, he kind of talked about how, you know, there was only like a handful of people. You know, Oculus has been out forever. VR has been out for a while. This NBA courtside experience has been out for at least a year or two. And he, when, once you put it on before the game, you kind of sit in a lobby and it's like a handful of people, like 15, 20 people. And you can kind of talk to them as you're in this lobby waiting for the game start. When the game starts, then you go down and you can actually sit courtside. He said the experience was dope. The only issues he had was you can interact with the other people that have this live experience. Like you can talk to them about the game, you know, kind of like you would as you were sitting courtside, mm-hmm. sitting next to a stranger. But the problem is if they've got, I thought this was funny. If they have a bad connection, you can kind of see them and they're kind of wigging out like they're having a seizure.
Well, that was the thing. That was one of the things I wrote in. I wrote a note about. I agree with you that this was the first meta, quote unquote, metaverse example that makes sense to me.
Right.
But now what Nika said, what you just said, Nika said actually makes a lot of sense as well. As far as I don't think a lot of these companies are really going to get on board and do this right until Apple is involved. Honestly, right. Apple leads these trends. People, you know, Facebook/Meta doesn't have the best track record with people's privacy and PR and everything else. So I don't think that many people would even want to get in bed with Meta. I mean, they have the captive audience with 3 billion users or whatever. But, you know, I think once Apple gets involved, you're going to see this whole game change real quick. But the idea that the avatar sort of conks out if your connection isn't great. Yeah. I was wondering, like, what happens if somebody is wearing a headset and they do have some legitimate physical ailment? And maybe they're at home by themselves and they pass out or they have a heart attack, God forbid, or something like that. Like, what happens to their avatar? And would somebody in the VR space with them be able to tell that they were in distress and be able to like call somebody or something? I don't think anybody's even thought about that possibility. But when he said it looked like this avatar had a seizure and I was like, what if he did have a seizure? You know what I mean? Like, what would happen? So that's just a whole nother, you know, thread or tangent I kind of went on, but it'll be interesting to see how they handle that.
I can see that absolutely happening because I know that there have been game streamers, particularly on Twitch. It probably has happened on other platforms, but I know that there have been Twitch streamers that have had medical issues while they are actually streaming, and their community are the ones who alerted the authorities. It's like, hey, you know, I think this, you know, this person, is having something, you know, going on. And, you know, so I remember reading stories about that on multiple occasions. I know that it also happens quite often in like Japan where you have people there that they're trying to do like stream for like 36 hours, 48 hours straight. So they just literally they're giving themselves.
But you can see them though, right? Yeah. You can see that person.
You can see the person.
Yeah.
So I could see this just being an extenuation from that. I could actually see that happening. And being the non-Apple person, you know, on this, you know, on this show, I'm not anti-Apple at all. I just don't have any Apple devices that I use currently. I absolutely agree with, Apple, in my opinion. They don't create new stuff all that often. But they will perfect somebody else's joint.
Perfect everything.
And they will just get it right. And it's just like, okay, let me, you know, dabble my little apple in this. And now y'all see how you like it. And they just take it to the next level. So you will get, it's like all the time, like, you know, Terrence and I on other shows, we have talked about like that Apple fanboy versus the Android fanboy or just the Microsoft fanboy. And we never understand. It's like, you like what you want. You know, you like what you like. Why do you have to define yourself by what somebody else thinks about a product that they did like or just, you know, or like or don't like? I don't get that. But there would be people who would be like, no, Apple did this. It's like, well, no, Android did it first, or Microsoft did it first. It's like, well, what difference does it make? Apple is definitely killing
Apple
it. You have to
did it best. Yeah, well, so you'll always be able to say Apple did it best.
So, I do agree with that. When Apple gets in it, they get in it, and it tends to be pretty good usually.
Right. Yeah. So just a real quick, just to kind of, kind of do an overview real fast. One of the other, in addition to that issue, which once more people adopt, it may be kind of hard to kind of pinpoint one person who may be having some connection issues because, like I said, right now it's so new. There's only like a handful of people, so they're easy to spot out. But once you get thousands of people, that may be similar to sitting in an actual courtside game, right? The other only issue that he kind of noted was, resolution, because, you know, with the cameras, you know, I think they mentioned like one of the cameras was like $6,000. Another one was like $11,000 to actually play this, but that's not the same type of resolution that people are used to when you're actually sitting at home in front of your 4K television.
Yeah, problem with 4K.
Right. You know, but as but as more of these cameras, you know, they get a little bit better with the camera technology, you know, I can see that not being an issue. So those are kind of the negatives. The positive thing was he mentioned was, you know, you get to see, you get to watch the experience from different angles that you never even saw, you know, because they've got a camera, one of these cameras sitting at the announcer's table. So you see what the announcers are seeing. You see, you know, at the different, and backboards. So they got the cameras behind the backboard. So, you know, normally we're used to either looking left or looking right if we're sitting at courtside or if we're watching TV, but the ability to be able to see it live from the backboard, somebody shooting a three or somebody dunking or whatever the case may be, that may be something interesting. So all that to say, something like this, sports players, sports events pushing this may be the catalyst for more VR adoption.
It would be interesting, though, to see how much they start charging, because it ain't no way in the world. Yeah. I'm going to be a courtside season ticket holder and y'all giving this shit, excuse my language, away for free in the metaverse. You know what I mean? Right now it's free.
No.
But they going to have to figure out some sort of revenue model for this, because there's absolutely no way you can continue to let people do this for free while people are paying thousands of dollars for courtside seats in real life.
The first game might be free just to get you hooked to it. But no, they will absolutely charge for this, because the problem of the sports teams right now is that they can either not play enough games. Like the NFL is like, if we could just play every week for 52 weeks, if they could figure out a way to physically make that happen for their players, there's no question that they wouldn't do it, because as long as we're making money, why not do that? So they want to, we can only go to maybe 17, maybe 18 games. Well, the stadiums, we can only build them so large. We can only get so many people in the games. Well, how can we make more money? Okay, well, let's give them this virtual experience. And they're absolutely going to charge for that. So there's no question in my mind.
And they may do a different type of experience, because there's nothing like being in person. So that'll always be the top tier thing to do is see it live in person. But you could do with VR, they kind of outline it in the article where they talk about a different type of experience, to where, you know, if you pay a certain amount, you get like a VIP level, a box level experience. And then if you pay for a certain, you know, even higher than that, you may get to actually watch it sitting next to a sports celebrity. Now, of course, they're not sitting next to you, but, you know, they are in the same area to where in this lobby. Right. In the metaverse, right? Mm-hmm. To where you're actually sitting next to this person. So, you know, that's something that you can't necessarily get going to an actual live event, unless you get the right,
I don't care. I have priced out season tickets before. They are not cheap.
It's amazing.
And y'all need to be charging these fools something commensurate with what I'm paying to sit on that floor. I don't care. Moving on.
All right. So for our next tech story, this is actually kind of a rehash of something that we've talked about before. I believe it was, maybe a month, 5 weeks, 5-6 weeks ago, we talked about 3G on all the carriers in the U.S. this year is going to shut down. I believe the last one is December 31st for Verizon. But you've got Sprint and T-Mobile. They're actually doing stuff in February, So AT&T in February.
T-Mobile is March. They said March 31st, but now they're saying sometime between March and July.
So, so we have talked about it before, but I don't think that we went into all the issues that are now that this stuff is really on the, literally it's like weeks away in some cases. We, there's a lot of issues, and like the ones that, I talked about, I have a medical device that is going to stop working, and they've already, arranged a way to work around it because it also has, Wi-Fi and I can use it that way. But I didn't think about like OnStar in my car stopping, stop working. Now, heaven forbid, I'd never want to have to use that. But if I needed it and it's not there, that, I'm thinking, so I don't want to upgrade my car just because OnStar doesn't work, but there's something else that has to happen. So Stephanie, why don't you just tell us about all the things that are potentially going to stop working when they turn 3G off this year?
Yeah. I wanted to bring it back because like you said, we touched on it, but I don't think, the sense of urgency was there that first time because it wasn't happening right then. But I think this is going to affect more people than we really understand. And so I wanted to make sure that we at least got the word out because I know, in communities of color, this is going to affect low income communities, folks that might still be using prepaid phones and smart devices like that, and the elderly community who does use medical devices or also uses older flip phones and things like that. This is really going to affect those two communities in particular, I think, more seriously than most. So I really wanted for our listeners to understand if you have, elderly people in your family that do still use flip phones or are using a Med Alert bracelet or something like that, or you know other family members that are using, Cricket phones or burner phones or something like that, they're going to need to figure something out. And one of the issues that they talked about in the Washington Post article that I got a lot of this from was that, older Americans, especially are not that tech savvy. Right now, we are still in COVID. There is still a whole panorama going around. So they're less likely to want technicians to come into the house to help them do that upgrade. They're less likely to want to leave the house to go to a Verizon or an AT&T store to get their upgrades done. So, this is really going to be an issue for a lot of older people, but also alarm companies are still scrambling. In addition to the car companies and OnStar, home alarm companies are still scrambling. There was one particular kind of professional alarm society that says their members still need to upgrade 4 to 5 million devices around the country. And I don't think that, is a little number that still need work. And they're actually petitioning the FCC to try to force AT&T at least to push their date, their rollout date back from next month. So, there are a lot of issues, a lot of considerations. They said cars released between 2010 and 2021 could be affected. There's a CNBC article, and hopefully we can link it in our show notes, but there's a CNBC article that talks about all of the cars that could potentially be affected by this. And it's all of the cars. So I started writing some down because I was going to, read off a couple because I thought it was only going to be, Hondas and Toyotas, but literally every different car manufacturer has some make and model of a vehicle that they sell that could be affected by this 3G shutdown. I actually need to call Nissan for myself because I saw, a similar car on the list to mine. And I was like, ooh, does that affect me too? So this is going to be, I think, it may not be a huge deal like, Y2K, but it's going to be a bigger deal than I think people think it will.
Yeah. And I was thinking, if you guys remember back in the day, and these things are still around, there was a phone, and for whatever reason, I understand the reason, but they called it the Obama phone. You guys have heard about those, right?
Yes.
So number one, they're not Obama phones. It was actually started in the Bush administration. So if anything, it should be the Bush phone. But anyway, the Obama phone, as everyone calls them today, many of those devices, like I said, if you got one 10 years ago, 12 years ago, good chance that it was a 3G phone. And if you were on that program, it's because, you financially probably couldn't afford to have the latest iPhone or the latest Galaxy. So if those things just all of a sudden stop working, your connectivity goes away. That is ridiculously disruptive to so many people. Mm-hmm. So I hope that, I don't want to be the one to say you need to extend this forever. Because there's always going to be that one person who's just, I'm not upgrading. You know, they will just forego every warning that comes out. But you have to make sure that you're at least getting the critical mass of people who are using this, because no one is using old stuff because they just want to be on the old stuff. Generally, they're using the old stuff because they can't necessarily afford to get the new stuff, or they're not tech savvy enough to know that the new stuff is different than the stuff that they already have. They may think that what they have is the new stuff. So I definitely want to, and we'll continue to talk about this as these dates come up. Just to make sure that people know and understand, hey, it's like, you know, it's not like this feature is going to stop working.
Right.
You will no longer to be able to make phone calls or send text messages. The thing that you do, you know, 80% on a phone like that, you will no longer be able to do.
I just want to remind people, like, call, you know, reach out to your carrier, because a lot of carriers, at least for right now, I can't say that this is always going to be the case, but a lot of carriers are offering free upgrades or very discounted upgrades. Not just phones, like the alarm companies and, you know, device companies and other companies like that. So reach out to whoever your cell service is through or whoever your device manufacturer is and see what you can do, but be proactive about getting this done sooner rather than later.
You want to add anything, Terrence? Are you good?
No, I agree with everything everybody else said, you know.
Terrence, yep.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, you know, you think about, especially with the car companies, I read that story, and, you know, it's amazing how, you know, cars, as I think if I read it correctly, 2015 and newer are still clinging on to the 3G technology, because again, it's not just a phone, it's an entire car, you know, so trying to upgrade and, space those out, you know, it's not as simple as just going to your wireless carrier and getting a new phone. You know, it's a little bit more, complicated process, you know.
Drive to the GM dealership.
I'm not buying no new cars just because the 3G don't work no more.
Yeah. My 3G doesn't work. Can you upgrade me to a new car for free?
Right. Can I get an upgrade to the
2021? Nah, son, that's not going to work. So.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
No.
So I want to get into our main story.
Teacher.
Go ahead.
Can we please talk about Rebundle real quick before we do that?
Yes.
Can we have like 5 minutes for Rebundle?
No, we have more than enough time. I was going to put that at the end, but you know, let's go ahead and talk about it now.
I have a personal attachment to this story. Like, we got to talk about
it. Do you get in with the extensions? I don't think I've ever seen you wear extensions, you know, you always stay with the short hair. Is this something near and dear to your heart because you're the market or you're the actual consumer?
Well, let me break it down for you. Let's talk about Rebundle.
Let's tell folks what it is first. So, yeah.
Rebundle is a hair-focused startup that is based in St. Louis. Sierra Imani May and Daniel Washington are the co-founders, but it is a hair company that does extensions made out of plant-based materials. So, mostly banana, banana fiber is the core material of the extensions, and they sell them in different colors. They sell direct to consumer through their website. So Rebundle, but they just raised $1.4 million in a pre-seed round, which is huge for a startup of color, especially a startup of color run by women of color.
A non-tech startup.
Run by women of color. I mean, that's to raise more than $1 million is unheard of, for that demographic. So shout out to those sisters, that are doing the damn thing. But the idea that it is plant-based hair extensions. So hair extensions can either be synthetic, which I don't think anybody really knows what that means and what they're made of, or they can be human hair. And I can tell you, 20 years ago, easily 20, 25 years ago now, the scalp issues I have today, the dermatitis I have in my scalp to this day, which I do now manage pretty well with shampoos and different things like that. But the scalp issues I have to this day started because of some synthetic braids that I had that did not agree with the skin on my scalp.
And so, it wasn't due to the homegirl braiding too tight.
I had had braids multiple times before this time that were tighter. And you know, these were micros. So they don't even do micros as tight as other types of braids. But it was the hair. It could have been some combination of the tightness in the hair, but I know for a fact it was the hair had a big part, to do in why my scalp was the way it was, like, to the point where when I took those braids, I got them to go on vacation. I was in Jamaica, get my swerve on. And maybe synthetic hair doesn't mesh well with chlorine or something in the pool. I don't know. But, when I got home and took those braids out, my scalp was a mess. It was just a sore. My whole scalp was one big sore to the point where, you know, I couldn't get relaxers I didn't get a relaxer for like a year and a half. My hair grew really well during that time, but I couldn't get a relaxer. I couldn't do anything to my scalp. It was so raw and so tender and so bad because of these extensions. And just the idea that they may have come across a product that won't do that. And I know there's a bunch of other sisters out there that have a similar story to these synthetic hair. Cause you don't know. You don't know what is in that synthetic hair. You don't know where it's coming from, what kind of petroleum products they use them to make it look straight, you know, anything like that. We just out here buying this stuff from these beauty supply stores with no knowledge of what it can possibly do and how it can affect our bodies physically. So the idea that, you know, they want it to be more sustainable and want it to be more intentional about the stuff they put in and on their own bodies that helped them to come up with this product is amazing. And I was like, we have to get the word out there and blow these sisters up, because this is a huge problem in the Black community. Y'all know sisters love changing their hair up. And if we can get a product that'll help us do that more safely, I'm all for it. And thank God they got more money to do it.
I know for a fact that there are a bunch of folks who watch this live stream, who listen to this podcast, who absolutely know how big of an industry the Black hair care industry is. Exactly. But I also know that there's a lot of folks who watch this live stream, who listen to this podcast, that have no clue how big the Black hair care industry is. So this $1.4 million that Rebundle has gotten is huge. Number one, as Steph, you know, said, you know, at the beginning, this is not something that happens a lot for a woman Black owned business that is not tech getting funding. It is extremely, extremely rare. But getting it in, this industry is probably just as rare, because, you know, you have a lot of big giant corporations that are trying to capitalize on, Black hair care, products, because it is such a big business. So I'm just happy to see that these young ladies have been able to launch this and get the funding that they have. And I'll be interested to watch and see, how they grow, because if this hits, it'll hit. I mean, they could be huge in a couple of years time.
And so, to piggyback off what you just said, Rob, and to kind of circle back, Stephanie, I find it odd, but I don't find it odd that Black hair care industry is such a large industry to where these young ladies can get 1.4 million. And I don't want to say like nothing, because that's a lot of money. But the fact that they were able to get 1.4 million for a non-tech startup means that there is serious money in the Black hair care industry. But even still, it still perplexes me how it's such a large industry, but we do not corner this market hardly at all. And if we do, it's a very low percentage. What I mean by that is, black created, black owned hair care products. Now we can think of a bunch of hair care products that we use. We go to the beauty supply store and we get all these products that have our faces on them that are marketed directly to us. We're not making them. We're not distributing them. We are not selling them in our stores.
I push back a little bit on that.
Up until now.
Yeah.
Right.
Quite a bit.
Right. And that's kind of the whole point I was getting to is to now we are finally starting to take a hold of this industry that directly affects us you know, and we're finally starting to take ownership in that, which is why you now see Rebundle getting 1.4 million. I've got a homegirl, a good friend of mine, you know, and she does something similar to where she creates and sells hair care products, but I think she may be outsourcing the actual product from another country. So the fact that these ladies are doing it themselves, they're doing plant-based because
and they plan to set up their manufacturing here in the United States.
And they're,
as well.
and they're setting up stuff in the United States here because it is, it's, I'm a guy, but it's common knowledge that when you get synthetic hair to put in your head to do box braids or whatever, you know, you're supposed to dip it in something in order to alleviate the irritation that you get from putting it in your hair. So this is not something that they're just making up. This is a known issue. And the fact that they're actually tackling it and the fact that they were able to get $1.4 million.
They're going to make me go out and get some braids. That's all I'm saying.
Means that it's an important product and there's money behind it. You know, there's a, I mean, that's just like a 1-2 punch for anybody, a venture capitalist, somebody looking to invest. Is it an actual problem that needs to be solved?
Yep.
And is there money behind it? Those are, if you can answer those two questions, they're going to throw money at you.
And there's recurring money. Cause that's the third thing is, are you going to get return customers, repeat customers?
These are commodities.
There is absolutely recurring money behind this all day long. So, you know, again, shout out to Rebundle. Like they are about to blow up. Seriously, I'm so happy for them.
All right. So now we're going to get to this main story.
Yes.
Now we're going to get to this main story. So, Terrence, you just asked a simple question. Have NFTs jumped the shark?
I did. I asked that
you
question.
You asked that or just Stephanie, did you ask that? You asked, I'm sorry. Well, Stephanie, you asked that question.
No. But I've asked that question before.
That's why I thought it was you. That's why I thought it was you.
My answer was yes, only because my
ignorance. I'm a big Happy Days fan.
Okay. So Stephanie, since you're the one who asked the question, I'm going to let you expound upon why that may or may not be true.
Well, I mean, I you know, it's funny because we throw articles in our little rundown to research. And I read the last one, the Forbes piece about it's here to stay. And they made some very good use cases for it. So I may be slightly not changing my opinion about it, but open to other perspectives. But I do, I really feel like this is something that people with money are doing to have a little fun right now. But, how is this actually helping the greater society? And I kind of came to that because a friend of mine on Facebook posted a status question and he was like, how are NFTs and Web3, what are they going to do to alleviate poverty in society and lift us up as a whole? And honestly, he had 100 comments in there and nobody could really answer that question definitively with how these things were going to do that. And it really got me to thinking like, what is the point of all this beyond vanity and flexing how much, you know, crypto you own and everything else? And, you know, one of the examples of that is the fact that this DAO, recently purchased Let me get it right.
Why do you do that? DAO stands for
Decentralized Autonomous Organization. Right.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I wasn't asking because I knew. But, I was asking because I needed to know.
Oh, but they bought one of the Dune books.
The copy of the original, you know, notes and everything else that went into Dune for $3 million. And then realized because they were going to use it to create these spinoff animated series and do all this other stuff with the content in the book. But they realized too late that they, while they own that book, they don't actually own the copyright to any of that material. Mm. So you can't actually take it. And the example that somebody
gave. All they own is a book.
All they own literally. Is a book. The example somebody gave was, you could buy Spider-Man issue one, from Marvel for a jillion dollars. You can't go and create your own Spider-Man cartoon based off that issue because you want to, you know what I mean? And start selling it. So it's the same kind of concept. And the idea that people don't really know enough about how all of this stuff works before they just throwing bags of money at the thing. I'm like, and now Walmart's getting in on the act. I'm like, really, Walmart? Like, once Walmart is in it, I think it pretty much has become a mainstream thing that either will be mainstream forever or will go away and jump the shark.
Okay. So I want to ask just to make sure, when you say jump the shark, you mean like in Happy Days is like, okay, yes, this is really not a great show anymore?
Over because now everybody's doing it and it's crazy. It done got too crazy. So it's either going to jump the shark or become a ubiquitous part of our everyday lives.
What you thinking, Terrence?
I think it's going to be the jump shark part.
It may jump to shark now early because everybody is still trying to figure out the answer to your initial question. How is this going to help society? And everybody's like, oh, it's going to help society because it'll decentralize banks. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, well, maybe it'll change the game and, revolutionize ownership of products because you don't have to have it physical, so that's with the NFTs. And well, maybe now with this, situation or scenario maybe we can collectively pool our money together in order to make changes. Like, for instance, going back to our other conversation about the hair care industry, we could create a decentralized autonomous organization to, get a distributing deal in order to get hair care products from the creators and the manufacturers and then distribute those to black owned, beauty supply stores or something like that. So all those different ways, people are coming up with reasons as to how that's going to be the way. And I think with, crypto, Web3, NFTs, I don't think there's going to be one specific way. So I think earlier on, people are going to shoot their shot, whether it be for a good cause or whether it be like to literally, let me see if I can flip. Let me get some of these suckers to jump on this product.
This little digital asset right quick.
Right. And, or create this group and then do this thing and say, oh man, that's not going to work. And then on the side, I got all this money sitting over here and I converted to crypto. And then now I've got me a little war chest. Right. So I think right now it's too early. It's too early. The potential for all of this technology is so vast to where I don't think our minds can yet comprehend the one way or the one, two ways that this is going to work. It's just going to take us time and we'll be doing different things. We'll try different things. And then eventually something will catch and then we'll be off to the races. Right now, everybody's trying all these different things, which is why people are like, this is stupid.
So here's my take on this. I absolutely don't believe that it has jumped the shark. I think the NFTs will be bigger this year than they ever were. I think they'll be bigger next year than they are this year and so on and so forth. I think these things are absolutely here to stay. And the biggest issue that NFTs have right now is that most people still have no idea what they are or how they work. So I look at this story about this, the fact that these guys are running a DAO and they didn't, you want to spend $3 million. You didn't think that, talk to a lawyer first, talk to an accountant first. This is not an NFT story. This is a y'all got finessed story. at best, you bought something thinking that you were going to be able to do something that you're not able to do. That has nothing to do with how NFTs work. That just has everything to do with, just because you buy a book doesn't mean you can take all the content in a book and do what you want to do with it. There's still these things called copyright. So when I think about NFT, when I think about, what they are, NFT stands for non-fungible token. What does that mean? Non-fungible. What does that mean? If you replace the word fungible with replaceable, may help people understand what it is. Something that is non-fungible is like, well, let me talk about what something fungible is. If I have a quarter, that quarter has 25 cents worth of value. Stephanie, I can give you that quarter and then you can give me back another quarter. It's not the same quarter, but you give me back something else that has the exact same value. So quarters in that, aspect, they are fungible because I'm just, it's not unique. It's not like I can't replace this with something else. Now, if you were to give me a quarter that had a mistake on it when it was struck at the mint, and even though from a monetary standpoint, it's only worth 25 cents, but from a collector standpoint, it might be worth literally hundreds of thousands of dollars because there's only one that may be struck incorrectly. Now you're talking about something that is non-fungible because you're not talking about it as a quarter, as a monetary unit anymore. You're not talking about it as this collectible thing that there is only one of. So another example would be the Mona Lisa. The Mona Lisa is, it has its value because there is only one Mona Lisa. They have created numerous prints of it, but there still is the one Mona Lisa. It's non-fungible. That's all the NFTs are. You can almost think of them like receipts for things that you've done. So I hear, a lot of things that people are using NFTs for today is for art. I think a couple of weeks ago, there was a guy who was, who had a bunch of NFTs. He straight up got finessed. He was working, he thought some folks that were helping him fix an issue in his MetaMask wallet. And they basically told him to click the right buttons that allowed them to steal what he is saying is roughly, $3 million worth of NFTs from him. That has nothing to do with the NFT. It has everything to do with he got finessed once again. It was like, these things were stolen from him. It wasn't because of failing of how NFTs work. It was a failing of him. Like, I'm going to let you into my bank account and you move some stuff around to help me out type of thing. That's what happened to him. So when you think about, where NFTs are now, like I said, I heard a couple of different people talk on this. And, as I think about it, it's kind of like they're really almost like receipts to things that you have. It's like, here is a piece of digital art, that we're going to wrap in this token and it's going to be non-fungible. So we know that this piece of art, you now own the art based off of whatever license you had, that was baked into the NFT. Sometimes when you can have an NFT that says, no, this physical thing that you have, someone else owns it. That's what the NFT is saying.
That's the thing I see. I don't see NFTs getting value until they're linked to physical items. Because right now, you can talk about digital art and creators getting their money all they want. And that's great. I love the fact that creators can get their money. But at the end of the day, you can still just right click on that image, download it, and use it however you want. So it's going to be hard to get those digital assets to actually appreciate in value when there's so many copies of them floating around the internet. Now, when you can connect my house and my title, my deed on my house to an NFT so that when I need to transfer that ownership, it gets transferred seamlessly without the need of going through a mortgage broker and a bank and doing all that other stuff. That's when it's going to make sense. But right now, I just think it's a bunch of people with too much time and money, and not enough sense to do the work and the homework to know what's going on. I also think too, we talk about the fact that it's decentralized now. I don't think that's going to remain the case either, because I think eventually the suckers is going to get cleared out and you're only going to see one or two major players in the space. So now it's back being centralized again.
Well, I'm looking at what
risk.
Another reason why it's not going away. China is going full steam ahead with NFTs. Now, China has banned cryptocurrency in the country. When you think about, China, what is it? One out of five,
just
one out of six.
To figure out how to control it in the government.
One out of, 1.6 billion people in China. That's about one sixth of the population of the planet. If they are getting in NFTs are going to be a thing. That's just too big of an economy. That they are the number two economy in the world right now. They will, probably in the not too distant future be the number one economy just because of the sheer size of the country and how many people are there. So it's not going away. Now they basically have outlawed cryptocurrency in the country, but they're building their own blockchain that they want to tie NFTs to. That tells me this is not going anywhere. And as I said, I think right now the biggest issue for NFTs, as I said, is people just don't realize what it is, how it works. Things happen. Oh, that's why I'll never, be in the, NFTs. I remember back in the day, my grandfather, we were going to the store. And, we saw an ATM. Actually, it wasn't even a store. It was the bank. I'll never use that ATM machine. You mean to tell me I'm just going to take money and just put it into this machine. And now the bank has it. I don't trust it. We all use ATMs all the time. True story. I was walking in a Circle K about a week ago. They actually have a Bitcoin NFT machine. A Bitcoin, ATM machine
conversion,
Where you can actually go. Now, I don't think you could actually take money out. I think at this point you were only able to put it in, but it's like, yeah, this stuff isn't going anywhere.
Like convenience stores in my neighborhood, they're like, we take Bitcoin, like you can pay.
Yeah.
And Bitcoin now at a bunch of random different places. So yeah, I don't think it's going away per se. I just think
people are fumbling right now though.
Yeah. We're going to see what happens when the smoke clears and what's left. And I don't think it's going to look the same as this great new horizon that everybody is making it out to be right now. I don't think it's going to look like that at all. I think it's going to look a lot like a lot of the stuff we already have just on the internet.
Been where y'all are. It's like, so I have this digital thing that, you know, I have this digital art that I've just purchased. I paid this money for it, but I could have just got the JPEG and had the same art, the same fidelity, all that kind of stuff. I'll leave you with this. I actually went to see the Vincent Van Gogh digital experience, right before Christmas. And
I missed it when it came to my area.
And when I left, this is all about Vincent Van Gogh and the amount of work this dude did in like a 10-year span is just ridiculous. 2,000 masterpieces in 10 years. But that being said, I understood how NFTs could work from an artistic standpoint, because I walked out of there saying that, you know what? I'm never going to have a Van Gogh hanging in my, well, never is a long time. I'm probably not going to have a Van Gogh hanging on my wall with a light shining on it so I can just go look at it when I want to. That's probably not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I could get a print of one. I could absolutely get a print of one. But you know what also would be cool? I could put a 50-inch TV up on the wall and actually have this virtual experience that I saw that I would actually pay money for, to have that thing just playing on a loop on a monitor or on a TV that's hanging on my wall as art. I'm so serious about that I'm thinking about right behind me putting like a 50-inch TV that I would just have, you know, that I could use for presentations if I'm doing like a webcast. But, you know, generally it'll just be, you know, with an art, you know, piece of art, you know, up there. Now, once again, you could just go get the, you know, the JPEG and just have it, you know, like, you know, same thing. You could take a picture of a, you know, when you go see a, you know, nice piece in the, you know, in the museum, you could take a picture of it and play that. But I could actually have the thing that I could purchase from them that I now know that, okay, yeah, there are other people who have the JPEG, but I have this and it has value. And if Terrence is, you say, you know what, Rob, I really like that. You want to sell it? Well, how much, you know, we could actually do, you know, that type of transaction. I see the possibility after just being immersed in, man, this is really cool. I'm looking at all this art that is all digital that is shining up on giant screens in a converted warehouse. So.
Right. But the key to what you said with the Van Goghs, those are masterpieces now. Were they masterpieces when he did it?
Right.
We don't know right now.
Well, that's how art works. Says,
right.
That's, but all NFTs, art is basically as expensive as the person that buys it is willing to pay for it. That's always the case.
It's all subjective. Yeah. So.
Right. But my point is NFTs right now, we are what, in its infancy, a year, a two or three, maybe in at the most. It's going back to my original point, it's going to take years for us to finally see the value, not the use, not the resourcefulness, not the application. I think the value, I think, is what everybody's attracted to. And right now, cryptocurrency, NFTs, you know, everybody's trying to figure out, all right, how do I get value out of this? And I think that's where everybody's kind of still grasping at straws.
I will concede that point, that right now, from an art standpoint, you probably don't want to hold it long. You probably want, you're going to make the purchase, unless it's just, I'm going to go spend this money on this thing and I'm going to hold it forever.
If I buy an NFT of a Banksy piece, I'm going to hold that. You know what I mean? But if I buy an NFT of
your boy on the corner.
Yeah. Like, because literally everybody and a mama who can afford the gas prices are throwing stuff up on OpenSea right now.
You can buy.
It depends. Like, art is subjective.
So that I get. It's like, what was it? The first tweet. What did it go for? A couple million, almost Jack Dorsey's first tweet, $2.9 million or something. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it, but someone placed that value on it. Therefore, that's how valuable it is.
Well, it feels like there's a line in The Incredibles where they try to get Dash to not run so fast. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, you don't want to hurt the other kids' feelings and everything else. Blah, blah, blah. And you know, because everybody's special. And he says, well, if everybody's special, no one.
Then nobody's, right.
And that is what I feel about NFTs. It's like, if everything is special and everything has a value and everything can be non-fungible and everything can, you can assign a digital, you know, then what is the point of any of it at all? You know what I mean? It just,
we'll sense. Get there. I think we'll get there. I think it's too early to call right now. We know it's going to be something important. We know that it's going to be the future, mm-hmm. but we're still in the present right now. So I think it's just going to take time.
This is how I know it's going to be a thing. Banks are already getting their lobbyists ready to go and lobby against decentralizing, finance. They just don't want it. It's like, no, we make all the money right now. We don't want that to change. Let's go put people in place to create law so that we continue to make all the money and that we don't distribute that out to the people. The fact that that is going on right now as we speak. Yeah, this stuff isn't going anywhere. So. We are to that time in the show where we get to do one of my favorite parts, the Tech John Spotlight. So, Stephanie, why don't you go ahead and tell us about our Spotlight person this week.
Tech John Spotlight. So this week, hold on, let me get my paper together. We have a lot to thank Alan Emtage for, and I hope I'm saying his name correctly. His talent and work played a significant role in transforming our everyday lives and, more specifically, how we find and consume information. That's because Emtage invented the search engine. Without him, we may not have had Google or any other programs people use to search the web. As a graduate student and systems administrator at McGill University in Montreal, Canada, Emtage created and implemented the Archie search engine, a program that automated the previously time-consuming process of finding specific pieces of software. In other words, the world's first search engine. Unfortunately for Emtage, he failed to patent his invention. In 1983, Emtage entered McGill University in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, studying for an honors bachelor degree in computer science, which was followed by a master's degree in 1987, from which he graduated in 1991. Emtage was part of the team that brought the first internet link to Eastern Canada and only the second link in the country in 1986. In 1989, while a student and working as a systems administrator for the School of Computer Science, Emtage conceived and implemented the original version of the Archie search engine, the world's first internet search engine. In 1992, Emtage, along with Peter Dutch, also a McGill graduate, formed Bunyip Information Systems in Montreal, the world's first company expressly founded for and dedicated to providing internet information services with a licensed commercial version of the Archie search engine. Emtage was a founding member of the Internet Society and went on to create and chair several working groups of the Internet Engineering Task Force, the standard-setting body for the Internet. Working with other pioneers such as Tim Berners-Lee, Mark Andreessen, Mark McCahill, who was the creator of Gopher, and John Postel, Emtage co-chaired the Uniform Resource Identifier Working Group, which created the standard for Uniform Resource Locators, or URLs, the little thing you type in the search bar when you type www.whatever. Those are URLs. He basically created the standard for that, or helped to create the standard for that. On September 18th, 2017, Emtage was inducted as an innovator by the Internet Society into the Internet Hall of Fame in a ceremony in Los Angeles. And on October 20th, 2019, Emtage was conferred the honorary degree of Doctor of Science from the University of the West Indies. Emtage has spoken and lectured on Internet information systems and is Chief Technical Officer at Mediopolis, a web engineering company in New York City. Shout out to Alan Emtage, the father of search.
So I remember when I saw you put this in our show notes, I went back and I looked. It's like, I think I remember using Archie back in the day when I was in college. And it's like, at no point ever did I even think about a bruh created this. I probably didn't think about who created it. It was just like somebody at some university, which it kind of was. But but no, you know, he looked like us. That is, like I said, I love these spotlights just because you learn something else. You learn something new every day. How cool is this? We shouldn't be calling it, you know, when you say to go search for something, we kind of just
on camera with me. I feel alone.
I tried to send Rob a text message.
Myself. My bad.
I was like, I'm by myself here.
Yeah.
You
so
were saying such poignant things. I'm like, I need to see y'all.
My bad. But anyway, I'm just thinking. It's like, yeah, this dude created.
I didn't know
this.
That either. But I feel like I've heard of Archie in the context of Google, and the fact that that's where they took a lot of their, you know, technology and inspiration and everything else for Google. I've heard it being used in conjunction with how Google got its start, but never have heard the name Alan Emtage ever.
So yeah, we shouldn't be saying go Google this or go Google that. We should be saying go Emtage that.
Okay.
Go Archie.
Go Archie that. So, folks, before we wrap our show up, we always give a shout out and a thanks to our new patrons who join us. So this week we had a couple of new folks who are supporting us over on Patreon, over at patreon.com/thetechjohn. They are James Woodford and Lou Goon. And Lou Goon, we go back for, I think, 7-8 years ago. He's been, you know, been a member of like a Facebook group that I and a couple other brothers run from one of our other podcasts called the SMR Podcast. And he is like one of the minions. I mean, he's been supporting SMR Podcast since 2014, I think. So, yeah. So, Lou, and he's the one who actually said, hey, man, why don't you let people know on your website when they can actually watch your live stream? I don't know. It just takes, you know, common sense to come from the minions, come from other folks. So thank you, Lou.
It's an ongoing process.
So, folks, that is our show for this week. So we're going to go ahead and get out of here. And as we always do at the end of our show, we say this one little thing. Peace.
Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.